Okay, we're in Revelation chapter 18. Revelation chapter 18. Last week we introduced a woman who rode a scarlet beast. We got introduced to her name as Mystery Babylon the Great in verse 5. We talked about how Babylon, the city of Babylon, from its very inception, was the beginning of all false religions, from the very beginning of the Tower of Babel. How everything kind of flows from Babylon. We also talked last week about a rather uncomfortable subject for some of us, and that was the concept that the woman riding the beast could very well be the Roman Catholic Church. There are at least some similarities. I guess I want to be careful about being dogmatic, and I also want to be careful that you understand me. I am not anti-Catholic. I love Catholics. But there are some disturbing things about the Roman Catholic Church, and there are especially some disturbing similarities between what was described in chapter 17 and the Roman Church. For example, it says the first thing was that the woman said, sitteth on many waters, which we're told in verse 1 and verse 15, this thing happens to encompass many nations, peoples, which, you know, that you can check that one off in the Roman Catholic Church. And verse 2, it said that it talked about the kings of the earth have committed fornication with this woman, the idea of the influence of the Catholic Church upon governments in the world. And you can see that a lot in not only South American countries, but a lot in European countries, where you see the influence of the Roman Church. Talked about in thirdly the colors purple and scarlet, that she's clothed with these colors, which are the main colors of the Catholic hierarchy. Fourthly, we talked about how it said that she was adorned with gold, precious stones, pearls, and all. And we talked about the wealth of the Catholic Church. The idea of, fifthly, of Mystery Babylon, just her name itself. And we talked about how historians have been able to trace the flow of the Mystery Babylon religions from ancient Babylon, and how in history they when the Babylonian city began to fall, the mystery religions of Babylon migrated to a city called Pergamum in Asia Minor, modern-day Turkey. And from there, they moved into Rome. Things like, the priests wearing fish-shaped hats. Things like a high priest being called the Pontifex Maximus, which is a title that the Pope uses. Even the influence of Babylonian religion on our Christian holidays. I hate to say this, I don't want to ruin the fun, but, Christmas is not celebrated on Jesus' birthday. It is celebrated on Saturnalia, a Babylonian pagan holiday. Easter, we get our name Easter. We don't even celebrate it on the right day, really, because it ought to be tied to the Passover, but we don't tie it to the Passover. We tie it to some other thing with bunny rabbits and Easter eggs, which has nothing to do with the resurrection. And in fact, the name Easter itself comes from the name of the goddess Ashtart. So we see this, the flow of the Babylonian religion, and a lot of that even comes in, even touches us, doesn't it? It even touches us because, we celebrate the resurrection on Easter, and all. Talked about the sixth thing was that she was drunken with the blood of the saints in verse 6. And we mentioned last week that no other organization in the world has killed more believers than the Roman Catholic Church. If that throws you back, you need to study your history of medieval Renaissance Europe, the Spanish Inquisitions and all. Many, many thousands, hundreds, thousands of people killed. talked about in verse 9, seventhly, the seventh comparison, that this woman sits on seven hills or seven mountains or seven hills. And this is traditionally, historically, a description of Rome. It's the city of the seven hills. And lastly, an eighth comparison in verse 12, that this woman has a relationship with these ten kings, which we've kind of talked about being, from Daniel 2 and Daniel 7, a revived Roman Empire, which, you know, the Roman Catholic Church centered, the Vatican centered in Rome and all. It's not hard to see how that fits awfully conveniently. Now, let me say this. If Mystery Babylon is not the Roman Catholic Church, and that's possible, okay, don't want to get dogmatic here, okay, and we certainly don't want to go out and start yelling at Catholics. We want to love our Catholic brothers and sisters, okay? But if Mystery Babylon is not the Roman Catholic Church, I need to say this. It sure looks an awful lot like it. Some have suggested that Mystery Babylon may be some form of a world ecumenical religion, kind of a combining of things together, which I have to admit, it's also kind of coincidental that recently Pope John Paul has been doing things like inviting Hindu and Buddhist and Muslim leaders to the Vatican to pray with him. Interesting concepts, huh? Interesting concepts. And so, Revelation 17 and 18 is all about the fall of this entity called Babylon, Mystery Babylon. Actually, the fall started back in chapter 16, right at the end, verse 19. It says, "And the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell, and great Babylon came in remembrance before God to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath." And so, see, I kind of see chapters 17 and 18 as being an expansion off of that concept. You know, he talks about the fall of Babylon, that she's going to get what's coming to her. And now we get that explained. We get this kind of, you know, you open up the little folder that was mentioned. You open up and there's a whole bunch of stuff here. And this is chapters 17 and 18. And we left off last week in chapter 17. Look at verse 16. It says, "And the ten horns which thou sawest upon the beast," which was the ten nations, the Roman, the revived Roman Empire, "these ten horns which thou sawest upon the beast, these shall hate the whore, and shall make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire. For God hath put in their hearts to fulfill his will and to agree and give their kingdom unto the beast unto the word, until the words of God shall be fulfilled. And the woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth." Now again, also just by coincidence, you know, when John is writing this in 95 or so A.D., who is the city that reigns over the kings of the world? It's Rome. But see here at the end, now we see that the ten nations, the ten-nation confederacy, which the woman was riding on, she was supported by, they will turn against her at the end. And in fact, God will put it in their heart to do that, that somehow the European nations will turn against this Mystery Babylon, whether it's the Roman Church or whether it's some other organization, that the European nations will turn against them, and they will be the force that brings the judgment. It says, because God hath put it in their hearts to fulfill his will. It's his will that judgment comes, and these ten nations are going to bring it about. Now, pick it up in verse 18, chapter 18, verse 1. "And after these things I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power. And the earth was lightened with his glory." This guy is kind of a glow-in-the-dark angel, okay? You turn the lights out, and you can see this guy. This guy, like a little nightlight, comes down. "The earth is lightened with his glory. And he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the Great is fallen, and is become the habitation of devils, and the hold of every foul spirit, and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird." Now, actually, the word The word that's translated hold of every foul spirit and the cage of every unclean, it's the same word. It's the word for prison. So she has become a dwelling place of demons and a prison of every foul or unclean spirit. Literally, it's unclean. And a prison for every unclean or hateful bird. Now, a couple things here I want to pull out of this verse. Actually, about 2 pages worth of notes I want to pull out of here. That's about a fourth of my Bible study. Okay. This phrase, Babylon the Great is fallen. Now, in the Greek, it turns it around. It's fallen is Babylon. Fallen is Babylon. There's a repetition of the verb. It's kind of similar to what we read in Isaiah 21:9, where it says, Behold, here cometh the chariot of men and a couple of horsemen. And he answered and said, Babylon is fallen, and all the graven images of her gods he hath broken into the ground. Now, I don't know whether this is what John is, whether this is where this is coming from, is quoting from Isaiah 21:9. Why is it repeated? Let me give you a suggestion. If you recall back in Genesis 41, where Joseph had been in prison, remember, and then they found out that this guy could interpret dreams, and Pharaoh had this really bummer of a bunch of, I don't know what he'd had for dinner the night before, but he'd been tossing and turning on his bed and had the worst dreams. These dreams about cows eating cows and ears of corn eating ears of corn. What were we watching? A cartoon the other day where they did take off of the cone heads, and they were called the corn heads, And so he sees these corns eating, just horrible, horrible dreams, and wakes up, wants to know what it's all about. And remember how Joseph is called in and he gives the interpretation. One of the things, remember he had two dreams, and at one point Joseph says, the dreams are the same. They're both talking about the same thing. And he says in Genesis 41:32, Now, as for the repeating of the dream to Pharaoh twice, it means that the matter is determined by God, and God will quickly bring it about. Now, it has been suggested that perhaps this might be a principle of why it says fallen is Babylon. Repeating it twice because it's sure to happen, and it's going to happen quickly. Now, that's one suggestion. And certainly, as far as quickly, when Babylon falls, it will happen very quickly, as we'll see coming up. It says, Babylon the Great is fallen, and has become a habitation of devils, or a dwelling place of demons. Look at Isaiah chapter 14. Now, if you're taking notes, and if you want to do extra credit homework, there are 4 other chapters of the Bible that parallel these 2 chapters. Actually, there are 3 sets of 2 chapters each that talk about the fall of Babylon. Revelation 17 and 18 is one pair. The other pair is Isaiah. One of the other pairs is Isaiah 13 and 14 and Jeremiah 50 and 51. Now, in Isaiah 14, I thought this was kind of fascinating, because the context of this is talking about the very same fall of Babylon. Okay, if you don't believe me, good. Read it on your own, and you will find out that I'm not pulling your leg here. It's very clearly this is the end times. This is the day of the Lord. This is the final fall of Babylon. And look at this. Look at verse 12, Isaiah 14, verse 12. Isaiah suddenly starts talking about the ruler of Babylon. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. Who's that talking about? Satan. Of course. The driving force behind Babylon. And here in Revelation 18, it says, Babylon the Great is fallen, and it says, and is become the habitation of devils. Now, I'm going to stretch out my neck a little bit here and risk and say something that I haven't found in a commentary yet. So, check this out. Okay, get ready to chop it off. The phrase that says is become, the Greek word that's translated is become, it's the verb ginomai, which means to become. But it's not a present tense. It's a past tense. Now, I got to say that sometimes in prophecy, this aorist tense sometimes is translated this way. This is not an illegitimate way to translate it. But it is a past tense, and you could translate it this way. Babylon the Great is fallen, and had become the habitation of devils, and the hold of every foul spirit, and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. See, and where I'm driving at is that there's two different ways of looking at this. If you translate this in the present tense, it's almost as if the judgment comes, and as a result of this judgment and the wiping out, now suddenly demons are going to start living there. That's if you take it as a present tense. But if you take it as a past tense, and I think I'm kind of preferring that way, I'm leaning that way. See, part of the reason that the judgment is coming is because it is a habitation of demons and all these other things. Every unclean spirit and a prison for every unclean and hateful bird. Part of the judgment has come because of that, because it has already become. Now, you're kind of going, oh boy, he's going to be really boring tonight. Hold on here. It says it has become or had become the habitation of demons and the hold or the prison of every foul spirit and a cage or a prison of every unclean and hateful bird. Now, take another leap, okay? Take another leap here. Look at Zechariah chapter 5. I do not take credit for this. This is a Chuck Misslerism. But this one has stuck in me and will not let go. So I will share it with you. Zechariah chapter 5. Now, I got to tell you, what we're going to read is kind of an obscure little prophecy. And when you dig up all the commentaries and what people think this prophecy is talking about, they really don't pay much attention and don't give it much of a time of day. Let's look at this. Zechariah 5, verse 5. Now, this is part of Zechariah's visions. He's a guy who sees things or something, you know. He gets these visions. And Zechariah, so what you're going to read here is kind of symbolic, okay? Zechariah 5, 5. Then the angel that talked with me went forth and said unto me, lift up now thine eyes and see what is this that goeth forth. And I said, what is it? And he said, this is an ephah that goeth forth. Oh, great. Thank you very much. I'm really glad that you told me this is an ephah. What is an ephah? It's a big measuring basket. It's worth a couple bushels. I don't know, something like 6 or 7 bushels worth. Big, big basket. This is a measure of trade, a measure of commercial trade. This is the way, you'd sell your wheat by the ephah, something like that, okay? This is just, it's a big basket that carries one ephah worth of stuff, okay? This is an ephah, and it goeth forth. He said, moreover, this is their resemblance through all the earth. And behold, there was lifted up a talent of lead. Talent's about 75 pounds. This is the lid that's on top of this big basket, okay? About 75 pounds of lead. Now, I don't know if this is so Superman can't see through it, or this is to protect him because he's got kryptonite in it. You are asleep tonight on me. Wake up. Hello? Hello? I'm pulling your leg here. Please, grin at me. Hello? Hello? Let me see your eyes here. Okay. He's got this basket, and he's got a 75-pound lid on it made out of lead. And this is a woman that sitteth in the midst of the ephah. So, you got this basket, and there's a lady inside the basket with a lid on the top. And he said, this is wickedness. The woman inside the basket. This woman inside the basket. This is wickedness. I would suggest to you, it's the woman of Revelation 17 and 18. And he cast it into the midst of the ephah, and he cast the weight of lead upon the mouth thereof. So they take this gal, and they throw her in the basket and put the lid on top. Then lifted I up mine eyes. Now see, the commentaries say, well, this is a picture of how wickedness was taken out of Israel. I don't think that's the point. The point is, where is the wickedness going? Follow this. Then lifted I up mine eyes and looked, and behold, there came out two women, and the wind was in their wings, for they had wings like the wings of a stork. Now, you know, I don't know, I think of like storks, I think of Dumbo. You know, Mr. Stork delivers a little baby elephant, you know, and all like that. There is a significance about a stork, because a stork in Leviticus 11, those of you on Sunday nights, the stork is one of the unclean birds. Is anything starting to click here? A stork is an unclean bird. And what is Babylon? What had Babylon become? One of the places, a habitation, a cage, a prison of every unclean bird. I think this is an interesting coincidence. So these gals have the wings of storks, and they lifted up the ephah between the earth and heaven. Then said I to the angel that talked with me, whither do these bear the ephah? Where are they going, Joe? And he said unto me, to build it an house in the land of Shinar, and it shall be established and set there upon her own base. Do you know where Shinar is? Shinar is the land of Babylon. Babylon was built on the plain of Shinar. So, see, Zechariah has this vision, and there's this big old basket. There's this really, this lady named Wickedness. They toss her in the basket, put a lid on the top, and then these stork ladies come and carry Wickedness Lady to Babylon to build her a house. I don't think the purpose is just getting rid of the evil out of Israel. In fact, doesn't even mention that that's where it's coming from. By the way, Zechariah prophesied, his ministry is after the Babylonian captivity is over, and Israel, Babylon has already begun to fall as a world power. The Medes and Persians have already taken over. And this is the time of the rebuilding of the temple, was Zerubbabel and Ezra and all the Nehemiah and all those guys. Zechariah is one of those prophets along with Haggai. And here he's talking about, and by the way, the mystery Babylon religions are still in Babylon. He's talking about sometime in the future when wickedness will be taken to Babylon and a house built for it. Now, back in Revelation 18, some folks have looked at Revelation 17 and 18, and I think like the time before last that I taught through Revelation, I did this. We would often talk about chapter 17 is talking about the destruction of religious Babylon, and chapter 18 is the destruction of commercial Babylon. Because over and over throughout the chapter, of chapter 18, it talks about a city, talks about all the merchants and everything that are going on, it talks about all the kind of goods that are traded in the city, and all the kinds of people that are going to be really bummed out because they stand off at a distance and watch this city burn. I mean, it's not talking about a world religion. It's talking about a city. And in fact, the parallel passages in Isaiah 13 and 14 and in Jeremiah 15:51 also are very clearly talking about Babylon that is now in modern day Iraq. Now, there was a time Well, in fact, I was checking my notes from last time that I taught this about 10 years ago, and I was saying that I don't know who I was quoting, J. Vernon McGee or somebody, you know, one of these great Bible prophecy guys, saying that probably there's a good chance there's even a theory that one day that the city of Babylon might be rebuilt. Well, it's already happened. What's his name? Saddam. Saddam, this is one of the things that he's done with the money that he, when he raided Kuwait and raided all their banks. He's rebuilding the city of Babylon. Now, that in itself, I mean, you know, as far as the world's concerned, it's just maybe just building a tourist trap, you know, hotels, you know, and come visit the ancient sites of Babylon and all. But let me just put out, this is a Chuck Missler theory, and I kind of am curious about this. You know, maybe chapters 17 and 18 aren't all that different. In fact, as we go through chapter 18 tonight, you're going to find there's too many parallels between 17 and 18. They can't be two different things. Could it be possible that just as the wicked sorceries of Babylon migrated to Pergamum and then on to Rome, what if all the wicked sorcery gets stuck in an ephod, taken back with a lid on it, and taken back to the city of Babylon? Who knows? Maybe we ought to pay attention to the things that come out of Rome that talk about the uniting, getting together with the Muslims and all. Maybe we ought to be paying attention to those kinds of things. Maybe we ought to pay attention to the kinds of things where the Pope wants to be involved in a Mideast peace process. Pay attention. I wonder if it really is two things. I wonder if it isn't all in the same thing. And we're only seeing parts of it now. Just like 60 years ago, nobody had a clue that the nation, well, not every nobody, but most people didn't have a clue the nation of Israel would actually be reborn again. Who knows if wicked Babylon is in the birthing process even now? Now, did that all make sense? Sorry. Okay, let's move on. Verse 3. For all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. The phrase, drunk the wine of the wrath, that threw me. It's not, you should, don't look at the wine of the wrath. It's the wine of her passion. It's her passionate wine. It's the thing that the prostitute does to get the guys all drunken and in a stupor so that she can get business out of them. This is the idea. All the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. And the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her. Talking about the spiritual idolatry, leading kings of the earth away from God into false religion. And the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. Verse 4, and I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. Now, I imagine this is probably being spoken to those living on the earth at that time. But the principle here applies to us. Come out of her, my people, that ye be not partaker of her sins. The word partaker means to have fellowship with. That you not have fellowship with her sins. One of the lessons here, gang, is to not get caught in the world's sins. Don't get caught in the world's sins. We get too close to the things of the world, gang. It's going to affect us. Galatians chapter 6, verses 7 and 8. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. But he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. You know, an example of this, you know, of the danger of getting too close to the things of the world, you know, is think of our old buddy Samson. You know, Samson was called of God, chosen. There was a sense of holiness on his life. He was a Nazarite, which means somebody set apart for God's use. God gave him gifts. God gave him strength to be used for him. And yet, you know, Samson had a problem with the ladies. Samson had a problem with the ladies. And you see different things all through his life where he's kind of getting close to the wrong people and gets in trouble. Then he goes and gets involved with another relationship he shouldn't be, until ends up with Delilah. Kind of like the moth that's flying around the flame of the candle. You know, when you fly too close to it, you're going to get burnt. And it says, one of the most tragic verses I know of, it says he did not even know the Spirit of God had departed. He lost his strength. And so, gang, even here where it says, come out of her, my people, that you don't have fellowship with her sin. And so, gang, what a warning for us. To not get too tangled up in the things of the world. It says that you receive not of her plagues. In other words, if you get too caught up in the things of the world, when it's time to run, you can't. You know, you got all your fingers in the little holes there, you know, and you can't get them out. And the time's ticking away. The bomb's about to go off and you can't get away. Because you've been messing with it too long. Think of the story of Lot and what he went through. You know, if you read through the history of Lot in Genesis, it began that he began by he kind of pointed his tents in the direction of Sodom, which he knew was a wicked city. Then he was living outside of Sodom. Next thing you know, he's living inside of Sodom and is considered one of the elders, one of the leaders of the city. And God's judgment, it was time to come, for God's judgment to come on Sodom in Genesis 19. And it says that the mercy of God was on him, and the angels had to grab him by the hand and drag him out of the city. And yet his years of compromise affected his family. His sons-in-law thought he was joking. They got left behind in Sodom. His wife had fallen too much in love with Sodom. And when they were warned to flee and not turn back, she just couldn't quite let go. Well, I really love that place. Oh, that's where my kitchen was, you know. Well, it was more than that. And she turned into a pillar of salt. His daughters had become so touched by Sodom that later on, even though they survived the fire and brimstone, they cooked up this plan of incest with their own father. And so, gang, oh, what a warning here, verse 4. Come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. You know, gang, it is not about how much I can get away with. It's not how close can I fly to the flame and not get burned. It's how far can I stay away from it. Verse 6. No, verse 5. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities. Now, you know what you say to your children. I had it up to here. I kind of see that in this verse. God says, I've had it up to here. But for him, it's all the way up to heaven. So that kind of, to me, speaks a little bit about how merciful he is. He's had it up to here, but it's got to get all the way up to heaven to get that far. Verse 6, he says, reward her even as she rewarded you, and double unto her, double according to her works. In the cup which she hath filled, fill to her double. Now, see that the principle is that Sodom, Babylon, is going to be judged with the same judgment that she judged others. She's going to be judged with the same judgment. Reward her even as she rewarded you. Look at Matthew 7. Matthew chapter 7. Jesus said this to us, verse 1, Matthew 7. Judge not that ye be not judged. For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged. And with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured to you again. That's what's happening here with Babylon. God doesn't have to worry about, well, should I give them a judgment level 5? Or should it be a level 2? I can't decide today. What shall I be? All he has to do is look at what kind of judgment Babylon gave, and that's how he decides how much judgment to give to them. Jesus says, verse 3, why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that is in thine own? Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, let me pull out the mote, the little splinter out of your eye, and behold, you got a 2x4 in your own eye? You hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of your own eye, and then shalt thou see clearly to cast out the mote out of thy brother's eye. We will be judged with the same judgment that we give others. The story is told of Mr. Jones, who picked up the wrong umbrella in a hotel lobby and was about to walk out when the rightful owner called attention to his mistake. Embarrassed, he offered his apologies. Finding his own, he went on his way. The incident, however, reminded him that he had promised to buy both his wife and his daughter new umbrellas. So, to his delight, just down the street, he found a store that had on sale umbrellas. And so he went in and bought 2 more umbrellas. He put the umbrellas on his arm and walked out the door and ran into the man who he had encountered earlier, whose umbrella he had taken mistakenly. The guy was looking at him suspiciously, seeing the 3 umbrellas hooked over his arm. The stranger exclaimed sarcastically, I see you've had a good day after all. Things aren't always what they seem, are they? Do they? You know, and sometimes we tend to judge each other kind of quickly. We judge by appearance, and we don't know where the other person's gone, what they've been through. When Jesus says, with what judgment you judge, you shall be judged. I want to learn to be more merciful, because I want God to go really easy on me. You know, this isn't even just a thing between me and God. It's kind of the way life is, isn't it? when we're harsh and critical towards other people, guess what kind of treatment we get back? The same way. So, when we read about this, you get the kind of judgment that you give out to others. Oh, I want to be merciful. And even if I'm going to make a mistake in judging someone, in how I'm going to view them, I would rather be more merciful. God, help me to be more merciful. Because I need all the mercy I can get. Move on, back to Revelation 18. Verse 7. How much she hath glorified herself and lived deliciously. So much torment and sorrow give her. For she saith in her heart, I sit a queen and am no widow and shall see no sorrow. She's glorified herself. She's been patting herself on the back. It says that she's lived deliciously or lived sensuously or luxuriously. She boasts about being a queen and not a widow. Because the city is so prosperous and stable, nobody sees the fall coming. I've heard quotes about some of the economists in 1929 saying that the United States stock market had reached an all-time permanent high. And that, that we have nothing to be afraid of because the stock market is secure. Well, and then months later the whole thing crashes and the Great Depression starts. Even in our lifetime, the great USSR, we can't sing that back in the USSR. Can't sing it anymore. There is no USSR anymore. And, some of you old folks in here, who remember in high school those commies and the Cold War, and it's over, gang. They ain't the superpower they used to be. And Babylon will be blind to the judgment that's about to hit her. Verse 8. Therefore shall her plagues come in one day, death and mourning and famine, and she shall be utterly burned with fire. For strong is the Lord God who judgeth her. Jeremiah 51:8 says that... No, that's not the one I want to do. Well, it's in here somewhere. Huh? 51:8. Babylon is suddenly fallen and destroyed. Howl for her. Take balm for her pain, if so she may be healed. It's going to be quick. It's going to be quick. Suddenly fallen. Yeah. Verse 9. Let's see where we are. And the kings of the earth who have committed fornication and lived deliciously with her shall bewail her and lament for her when they shall see the smoke of her burning. Now, as we've talked before, it says the kings of the earth are going to lament over her. That is all the kings of the earth except for 10 of them. Because the 10 that are involved with the revived Roman Empire, they're going to be part of the destruction, as we saw back in Revelation chapter 17. The rest of the kings of the earth, though, are going to be kind of rather bummed at this great place. I mean, they used to probably go on vacations there to Babylon. Take a cruise to Babylon. Take a cruise up the Euphrates River. And yet, these 10 won't be. I mean, they're going to be part of the destruction. I wonder if the smoke that they're watching rise could be something like a nuclear attack. God using a human instrument to bring his judgment. Verse 10. Standing afar off for the fear of her torment, saying, Alas, alas, that great city Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour is thy judgment come. And the merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn over her, for no man buyeth their merchandise anymore. Now here we have the second group that mourns over Babylon falling. First group being the kings of the earth. The second group being the merchants. And they're really bummed because, I mean, who's going to buy all my, you know, little jiggly head things I stick in the back of my... Okay, sorry. Verse 12. The merchandise of gold and silver and precious stones, of pearls, fine linen, purple and silk and scarlet, all fine wood, all manner vessels of ivory, and all manner vessels of most precious wood, brass, iron, marble. Verse 13, cinnamon, odors or incense, ointments, frankincense, and wine and oil, and fine flour, wheat, and beasts, and sheep, and horses, and chariots, and slaves, and souls of men. Interesting things they stock in their on their shelves, huh? The last two in particular, the word slaves, actually is the Greek word soma. It means body, bodies, physical bodies. And that's why the interpretations, they say slaves, because, I mean, they're just bodies. But, I know, that kind of, there could be some things that could be meant there. I mean, I was even kind of wondering about the harvesting of human organs and things like this. The merchandising of bodies. The second thing is the souls of men. Selling the souls of men. And the fruits that thy soul lusted after are departed from thee, and all things that were dainty and goodly are departed from thee, and thou shalt find them no more at all. The merchants of these things, which were made rich by her, shall stand afar off for the fear of her torment, weeping and wailing. Now, and so see, the second group, the merchants, it says the merchants were made rich off of Babylon. These are people who are becoming wealthy from the world, from the wickedness of the world. Paul writes to Timothy in 1 Timothy 6:9, but they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. I think part of Babylon's deception might have something to do with a lie that more is better. You know, I need more stuff. I need more salary, you know, to buy the more stuff. Part of what's all tied up here in Babylon are the merchants of the world who've made themselves rich off of Babylon. Verse 16. And they were saying, alas, alas, that great city that was clothed in fine linen and purple and scarlet, decked with gold and precious stones and pearls. Now, I don't know if that rings a bell, but that's exactly the way the woman was described in Revelation 17. You know, again, this is part of why I don't see how we can come up with saying that these are two different entities, because that's exactly how she's described in Revelation 17, verse 4. Verse 17, for in 1 hour so great riches is come to nothing. And every shipmaster. Now here we get the third group, okay? We got the kings weeping, we got the merchants there weeping, and now we got the shipmasters. And all the company in ships and sailors, and as many as trade by sea, stood afar off. Now, this third group, this is the guys that are in shipping. Is this the UPS guys? Don't tell Dave I said that. Okay. They stood afar off, crying. Verse 18, and cried when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, what city is like unto this great city? and they cast dust on their heads and cried, weeping and wailing, saying, "Alas, alas, that great city wherein were made rich all that had ships in the sea by reason of her costliness, for in 1 hour she is made desolate." Now, here's just a little hint. If you're looking for some investment advice, when we get into the Great Tribulation period, if you are still here, invest in shipping for about 6 years. Pull out, though, after about 6 years. You're going to lose it all, okay? Okay, verse 20. "Rejoice over her, thou heaven, and ye holy apostles and prophets, for God hath avenged you on her." Now, the Greek is literally, God has judged her with your judgment. God has judged her with your judgment. God is taking care of the injustices done to his people because of Babylon. Romans 12, verses 19 through 21 says this, "Dear friends, never avenge yourselves. Leave that to God. For it is written, 'I will take vengeance. I will repay those who deserve it,' says the Lord." And you see, he's going to do that. He's going to do that. He's going to do just that. "Instead, do what the scripture says. If your enemies are hungry, feed them. If they are thirsty, give them something to drink." Now, this is the New Living Translation. It says this, "And they will be ashamed of what they have done to you. Don't let evil get the best of you, but conquer evil by doing good." Verse 21, "And a mighty angel stood up, took up a stone like a great millstone and cast it into the sea, saying, 'Thus with violence shall that great city Babylon be thrown down and shall be found no more at all.'" Now there's a couple things that strike me here. For one thing, you gotta know that the people in this day and age, the ocean was a scary place. I mean, it's not like, you know, we're taking a 3-hour cruise, you know, on a little ship called the Minnow. I mean, we're not kicking back and we're just on a 3-hour cruise. Sorry, a little sidetrack there. Has nothing to do with this. The ocean was a scary place, a place of sea monsters and unknown, a place where if you're going to take a cruise across the ocean, I mean, all their ocean trips were just, you know, from, you know, hop, skipping, jumping around along the coasts. That's usually how shipping went. The ocean was a scary place. Remember what Jesus said about about someone who would cause one of these little ones to stumble? He said that person, if you cause one of these little ones to stumble like the children. He said it would be better for you if you had a millstone, you know, a big 2-ton round, huge stone thing tied to your neck and thrown into the ocean. Now, you don't even think about scuba gear in these days. You don't think James Bond escapes or anything. You just think of dying and drowning. And here Babylon, this angel takes up a big millstone, throws it in the ocean. And to me, it harkens back to the words that Jesus spoke, but the ones who would cause the little ones to stumble. Also in Jeremiah 51, verses 63 to 64, Jeremiah talks about taking a stone and throwing it into the midst of the Euphrates and saying that this is the way Babylon is going to sink, just like a rock. Verse 21, it says, "The mighty angel took a millstone, cast into the sea, thus with violence," or actually literally with a rush or an impulse, "shall the great city of Babylon be thrown down and shall be found no more at all. And the voice of harpers," actually could even be guitar players, "and musicians and of pipers and trumpeters shall be heard no more at all in thee." No more music. "And no craftsmen," or actually the Greek word is, we get a word, technicians. No technicians. No personal computer technicians or anything. "No craftsman of whatsoever craft he be shall be found any more in thee. And the sound of a millstone," industry, "sound of a millstone shall be heard no more at all in thee. The light of a candle shall shine no more at all in thee." You know, there's that phrase, the lights are on and nobody's home. Here, the lights won't even be on. Okay? No lights at all. And the voice of the bridegroom and of the bride shall be heard no more at all, indeed. Now, we could probably spiritualize this and talk about Jesus and his bride, but I think he's just talking about family life. You know, there won't be any happy voices in Babylon anymore. For their merchants were the great men of the earth, for by thy sorceries were all nations deceived. Now, you know what that word is, sorceries. It's pharmakia. And yes, it could be talking about things like witchcraft and the black arts and things like that. It could be talking about the nations being deceived by the drugs. Could be. And in her was found the blood of prophets and of saints and of all that were slain upon the earth. Last week we saw in Revelation 17:6 that the woman was drunk with the blood of the saints. A great persecution on God's people. Fallen, fallen is Babylon. And everybody in heaven is going to be going... Let's stand and pray. Lord, we see the end of the things of the world, Lord, laid out before us. That there will be a day, Lord, when the worldly things around us will fall. And so, Father, I want to pray in Jesus' name, Lord, that you would help us to keep as light of a touch on this world as possible. I pray, Lord, that you would help us as much as possible, Lord, that we might not be entangled with the things of the world. That when the world takes a dive down the canyon, Lord, we wouldn't be so tied to it that we would go too. So, Lord, help us. Help us to keep our eyes on the end of the story. Help us to keep our eyes on the fact, Lord Jesus, that you're coming again. I pray, Jesus, that you'd help us to keep our eyes on the fact that you love us fervently. That you have mercy upon us. That you care about us. And that nobody wants to see us untangled from the world more than you do, Lord. That you're not standing there yelling at us. You're there cheering us on, Lord. You're there with your hand outstretched, Lord. You're the one who holds on to us, Lord. I pray, Father, also, that you would help us to have a heavenly perspective, Lord, on those near us who don't know you. I pray, Lord, that you'd help us to not see them as the enemies, Lord, but as the victims caught in the web of the world. And I pray, Jesus, that you would give us hearts, Lord, and give us hands to reach out. Give us feet to go to them. Give us the words to tell them how much we love them and how much you love them. We wrestle not with flesh and blood, beloved, but against principalities and powers, spiritual wickedness in high places. And the individuals that you're struggling with, they're not the enemies. It's the ruler of this wicked world that is our enemy. So, Lord, I pray that you would teach us to take up the armor, the full armor of God, to be equipped, Lord. Lord, that those of us who felt tired and maybe we've stumbled a little bit, Lord, and maybe we've been kind of on our knees or rubbing our nose in the dirt, Lord, I pray, Lord, that you'd help us to stand up again, Lord.